It is Wednesday, February 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump launches new attacks against media reports linking his administration to Russia. South Korea says the killing of the older half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was likely sanctioned by Pyongyang. And we hear singer Katy Perry's latest single. It's all ahead. U.S. President Donald Trump launched new attacks Wednesday against media reports of alleged links between him and Russia, blaming the country's intelligence community for what he said were illegal leaks to news outlets. In a string of Twitter comments, Trump suggested news articles detailing links between him, his campaign aides, and ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Russian officials were aimed at undermining his victory in the November election. Meanwhile, Russia Wednesday dismissed a New York Times report that members of President Trump's campaign and other associates were in contact with senior Russian intelligence officials ahead of the November U.S. election. I spoke with VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf about the Russian comments.
Well, the Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov pointed out that these were anonymous sources and therefore they were extremely dubious in his view. Saying they're not based on any facts, they don't point out anything that is true, and referencing the idea of fake news, saying that you shouldn't trust such anonymous sources. So pretty much a denial of any kind of intelligence contacts, and they've always denied any kind of spying that goes on or intelligence related to either the U.S. election campaign or the Trump campaign or the officials who are around President Trump. So it didn't come as a big surprise that they would deny such a thing.
Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, is one of the people named in this New York Times report. And, you know, his name keeps resurfacing. And I believe that one of the reasons he was replaced as campaign manager was because of his ties to the Russians.
Yeah, that's what they say. There was concerns anyway about his ties, apparently. At least that's what, you know, we were led to believe by reports that came out. And certainly, you know, these increasing concerns about ties between aides or advisors to President-elect Trump and now President Trump is raising a lot of suspicion. And it's interesting to see the Russian reaction to all of this going on in the United States. Predictably, among a lot of the Russian lawmakers, we see some fairly strong comments that it could signal a change towards anti-Russian hysteria within the Trump administration, that it may be part of a witch hunt to go after anyone who wants to improve ties with Russia, and interesting kind of contradictory, but somewhat angry and concerned statements, we could say, coming out from a lot of Russian lawmakers. But the Kremlin has been fairly steady in saying that this is the situation with the resignation of the former National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, was an internal matter of the United States, and that Russia will not comment on it. The Kremlin will not comment on it. But it is interesting also to note that the Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, had denied that any discussion of sanctions to Russia had taken place between Mr. Flynn and the Russian ambassador to the United States. And of course, Mr. Flynn himself later came out indicating that they had actually touched on that issue and the issue of the expulsion of Russian diplomats in the United States. So interesting to see the Kremlin spokesman appearing to come to the defense of a U.S. official who later then was forced to resign over some of his withholding of information from his supervisors in the Trump administration.
Yeah, because as you noted, during the last days of the Obama administration in December, there was a decision by the U.S. to expel dozens of Russian diplomats. And that, you know, followed allegations of Russian cyber spying against the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton during the presidential campaign. So, you know, it seems like there are some heightened tensions, certainly diplomatic tensions at the moment between the two countries.
Certainly this is not going to help with relations between the two sides. I mean, it's, you know, there was a lot of euphoria and expectation and hopes here in Russia that with the election of President Trump, that there would be some very clear moves towards improving bilateral relations after, you know, they've sunk to the lowest levels in, you know, years with Russia's annexation of Crimea and support for Russia for separatists in eastern Ukraine. So there certainly was a feeling that based on President Trump's statements during his campaign when he was running for office, that he wanted to really improve relations. He famously or infamously complimented President Putin, depending on which what your views are on that issue, and also, questioned the situation in Ukraine and gave indications that, you know, sanctions against Russia could be lifted.
VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, a lot to talk about with fake news, as there seems to be often, as that phrase has become part of our common phraseology. We started at the top of the show. You talked about President Trump's tweets, and one of the things he talked about in the series of tweets was fake news outlets like CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, saying that they're fake news because they're reporting on these issues, and he doesn't think that that's accurate. So that was one area where we're hearing that phrase. We're also hearing some information about some fake tweets. Now, this comes from a press conference yesterday with Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi and Congressman Elijah Cummings, both referencing a Twitter account that seemed to be from Michael Flynn, claiming that he was a scapegoat for the administration's actions on Russia. The problem with this is that it was actually a fake Twitter account, and they had to come back and say that it was fake. Those tweets were not actually from Michael Flynn. So it just goes to show that even what you see on social media, even if it looks like it's coming from an official source, that might not always be the case. And then we have Facebook Vice President of Partnerships Dan Rose speaking about fake news at a conference yesterday in California. And his quote was, "At the end of the day, if people want to share stories that have been flagged with their friends, that's ultimately their prerogative." Facebook, of course, has been under a lot of pressure to combat fake news. And he's saying here that while they're giving people tools to try to flag stories, they're not in the business of necessarily removing them or censoring people. That's, of course, a big issue that Facebook has had to deal with free speech and the First Amendment. So signaling from these comments that while they're trying to limit some of the fake news, they may not be removing it altogether from the social network.
All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Afghanistan security talks end with a call for inclusion of Central Asian nations in future talks. Aid groups in North Korea struggle amid nuclear tension. U.S. Defense Secretary says NATO is the bedrock of transatlantic security. And the U.S. Ethics Office calls for an investigation of top presidential aide Kellyanne Conway. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft is on a 150 million kilometer reconnaissance trip to a possibly dangerous asteroid called Bennu. The spacecraft's robotic eyes have been recently switched on so that as it heads to its destination, it can spend the next few weeks looking for a mysterious class of objects called Earth Trojan asteroids. The scientists involved with the hunt say it's possible that leftover material that built Earth may be contained inside these objects. The search for the objects, they say, will provide a unique chance to explore just what might be the ancient building blocks of our planet. The OSIRIS-REx spacecraft is expected to rendezvous with and orbit the asteroid in August 2018. In 2020, it will grab a sample of asteroid material and bring it back to Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the propaganda of the Islamic State. Police in Malaysia say they've arrested a woman in connection with the apparent assassination of a half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. The woman detained on Wednesday morning at the Kuala Lumpur International Airport in the Malaysian capital was identified on travel documents as Dong Ti Hwang. South Korea Wednesday confirmed the victim was the North Korean leader's older half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, who was once in line to become the head of state. I spoke with VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Madden and asked him about the investigation into the killing.
Well, the South Korean spy agency briefed lawmakers today, and while the spy agency itself, the representatives did not speak to the press, some lawmakers spoke to local media, and they said the South Korean intelligence service said that there has been a long-standing order for the assassination of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, and that's been in place, and that there was actually an attempt to assassinate him that in 2012, that of course, did not happen, but it was not successful. So this has been something that's been in place for a long time. There is a lot of speculation that this hit, this murder that happened this week was connected to that standing order. Both the South Korean government and a source within the U.S. government believe that this was two assailants, these two female assailants identified as North Korean women, were in fact North Korean operatives. So there is a widespread belief that this is all connected and that it was ordered by the North Korean government, high-ranking officials in the North Korean government, and there is speculation that it could have been Kim Jong-un himself who ordered it.
And I guess there's probably speculation as to, you know, the timing of this, why this would happen now.
Yes, there is no clear explanation. I spoke to an analyst, and his speculation is just that. There's no real inside knowledge, but likely the fact that he was in Malaysia and somehow perhaps the North Korean intelligence service there found out that he was going to be there. So there was opportunity to get him in this unsecured location, because prior to this, the half-brother of the North Korean leader had been living in Macau and what has been described as under the protection of China for a long time. So he ventured out, I guess, to Singapore and then Malaysia, and then was actually on his way back. He had a ticket back to Macau on Tuesday, the day he was killed.
And also the means of death, apparently. What have South Korean officials said about that, the way that Kim Jong-nam was killed?
They also confirmed these reports that it was poison. It is not yet confirmed the exact means of how he was poisoned. There is still not confirmed whether it was toxic tip needles or a cloth saturated with some unidentified liquid or some sort of spray that was sprayed into his face.
That's VOA Northeast Asia correspondent Brian Padden. He's reporting from Seoul. As the terror group Islamic State continues to lose territory in Iraq and Syria, its propaganda has undergone a significant change, according to analysts. Many of the recent videos produced by the group have focused on the battle for the Iraqi city of Mosul, and the calls for foreign fighters to join the group are no longer so prominent, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
So we have the suicide bomber there, and the target's there. It's in Tamim, which is in eastern Mosul.
Charlie Winter of the London-based International Centre for the Study of Radicalisation has been tracking Islamic State's propaganda for several years. He described one of the latest videos put out by the terror group showing suicide bomb attacks on Iraqi forces in Mosul.
There's been a big shift away from this kind of idea of an Islamic utopia towards something which is more evolving around warfare. This video and videos like it are all geared towards showing that, yes, the Islamic State may be losing territory, but it's making that loss of territory as expensive to the enemy as possible.
When the Islamic State group was at the height of its strength, many of the videos focused on the utopian dream of an Islamic caliphate, showing peaceful landscapes and little fighting. They often called on Muslims to travel to the group's territory in Syria and Iraq. Again, Charlie Winter.
The group is still trying to communicate with foreign fighters, but in a qualitatively different way. It's no longer calling for people to make hijra, to migrate, that is, to Iraq and Syria. It's saying, stay on your home countries and attack from there.
Islamic State still promotes its utopian ideal. One recent video, titled Building Blocks, purportedly shows the terror group running public services in Raqqa, Syria, including a fire service, schools and hospitals. There is even a smiling policeman directing traffic. But the tone of the video is different, says Winter.
It's almost preemptively nostalgic, as if the group is recognizing that its territorial hold on places, even like Raqqa, which is one of its strongholds, is becoming more contested. When their morale is flagging, they can look to these videos and think, oh, that's how it was back in the day when the Islamic State was territorially coherent.
Winter notes that Islamic State continues to produce ultra-violent material, but broadcasters now rarely choose to air the videos, a change that analysts say has further weakened Islamic State's media presence. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Singer Katy Perry has a new single out, and VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with all the details.
It's a brand new song, the second single off of her upcoming album, album number 5 for Katy Perry, when it comes out this year. She said that she's going to be doing some experimenting on this new album. It's going to sound different than her previous works. But the first song was called Rise, and it came out last year and was used for the Olympics. The new song is Chained to the Rhythm. She performed that on the Grammys, and she has blonde hair these days.
I noticed that recently. So
she looked great on the Grammys and wore a white outfit and the spinning stage and all the special effects. At the very end of her number, she put up the Constitution of the United States, the line We the People at the very top. And so it was very interesting, you know, to watch her performance, and she put that little political thing in there during the Grammy broadcast. But she is coming out with a new album, which will be followed, I'm sure, by a tour. So I wanted to play the new song today for our audience to hear on International Edition. And this song, to me, when you listen to it, sounds an awful lot like Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine. She has taken that kind of 80s salsa Latin vibe. And so let's check it out. This is Chained to the Rhythm.
Are we crazy? Living our lives through a lens. Trapped in our white picket fence.
So how is her personal life going?
Her personal life is going well, from all indications. She recently threw a surprise birthday party, a 40th birthday party, for her boyfriend, actor Orlando Bloom. And they seem to be getting along very, very well. and have been dating now for more than a year. So there are always those rumors in the rumor mill about possible wedding plans. She was once married to Russell Brand. That ended a few years back. And as she put in her documentary film, it was very painful for her. And so I'm sure she's not quick to get married again, but it seems like things are going well with Orlando Bloom. So she's a happy person these days, romantically and also professionally. And she continues to perform and do her thing. She's promoting her makeup line. She's got various different cosmetics. I see her on TV with a commercial for her eyeliner and lipstick, which is a new line of makeup under her Kitty Purry makeup line. And she's also doing some other charity work. She's been involved with a lot of concerts for charity. So Katy Perry's always been one of my favorite artists, and I'm so excited that she's got a new album. And by the way, I know that Lady Gaga's Super Bowl halftime performance was viewed by 117 million people, the second most watched Super Bowl performance. The number one Super Bowl performance, Katy Perry, 3 years ago, 120 million people. So she still holds the ratings record for Super Bowl performances. But Katie's one of my favorites, and obviously that sentiment is shared by a lot of people around the world.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, Larry. That's the host of VOA's Border Crossings, Larry London. And the music, of course, of Katy Perry. Well, a German shepherd named Rumor was crowned America's top dog on Tuesday night at the 141st annual Westminster Dog Show in New York City. The five-year-old became just the second of her breed to win the coveted Best in Show award. Named after the hit song by British pop superstar Adele, Rumor beat out an Irish setter named Adrian, who took second place. Tuesday's win was the 104th in Rumor's show career. Her owner says Westminster will be her last major event. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Today is President's Day in the United States, when Americans pause to honor their national leaders, beginning with the first president, George Washington. From the time of his death in 1799, his birthday, February 22nd, was marked unofficially. It formally became a national holiday in 1885. Over time, Americans also began honoring another great leader, Abraham Lincoln, whose February 12th birthday falls near Washington's. Official recognition of the two began in 1971, with a day honoring all presidents every year on the third Monday of the month. Washington won lasting fame for leading Americans to victory in the War for Independence from Britain. His popularity was such that he could have made himself a king if he'd so chosen. Some of the officers in his army, impatient with the democratic process, urged him to do just that. "Banish these thoughts from your mind," Washington said, and issued a stern reprimand to those who made the suggestion. He ordered the army disbanded, resigned his commission as commander-in-chief, and retired to private life. At the time, America was a loose confederation of 13 states. Over the next 6 years, Americans struggled to devise an effective federal government, but one that left important powers to the states. Many Americans distrusted the idea of a central government and feared abuses of power by federal officials, especially the president. At this critical time, Washington was the one person who most Americans were willing to trust. He was the unopposed choice to be the nation's first president. When he took office, the United States had a constitution, but its government was not yet organized. When he stepped down, the U.S. was recognized by the world's major powers. Washington put the nation on a sound financial footing and created an effective military to protect America's expanding frontiers. In revolutionary France, democratic ideals gave way to turmoil, terror, and repression. But in the United States, under Washington's leadership, revolution produced stable, democratic, and lawful government. By leaving office voluntarily after 2 4-year terms, he set an important precedent for all future presidents. He also oversaw a peaceful